Good morning. Welcome to the Astrology Podcast. It's Monday, January 11th, two mornings after the Washington football team's 31-23 loss, a thrilling loss, I might add, to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Here to talk about that, it's the 43-year-old George Blanda to my 43-year-old Tom Brady, Matt Turrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. Yes, this time you got it right. That is the most accurate one of these openings you've ever done, and I am excited to hear it.
That was, other than Taylor Heineke, that graphic from Fox, I guess, was it Fox? I don't know, whatever, NBC. It was NBC. That graphic was probably the most notable thing from this game.
Very probably. I mean, I think we all sort of know it intuitively. It's part of the same, like, that Twitter account that counts who is now the same age that Wilford Brimley was when he was in Cocoon. But, Right. Man, people used to look old as hell.
You know which one of these messed me up recently? That was, it's so silly. I don't even know why it messed me up. But like Will Ferrell, when he did Elf, was like 33. And I'm like 10 years older than Will Ferrell. I don't know. That just messed me up.
Well, Will Ferrell has always seemed very 40-something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like even when he was like an early cast member on SNL, I guess he was like 25 and I thought he was 40.
Me too.
Anyway, enough about aging. That was a fun game. That was the best version of a playoff loss you could have.
I agree. How did you come into it? Like, I was very excited when they announced that Alex Smith would be inactive because I felt like if Alex Smith had played, they were going to lose, and I kind of knew how they were going to lose, and it wasn't even going to be fun to watch. And at least I thought Heineke would bring this sort of element of randomness to it. Now, I did not in any way expect what happened, but it was just like, well, this will be new and interesting, right?
Well, coming into it, I was hoping Alex Smith would be good enough to play because I just feel like good things happen. He, like, something about what he brings gives you a chance to win. And I did not feel as confident in a Heineke, circumstance. Even though what he did against Carolina would, like, showed promise, I think we all agreed, like, it was pretty garbage timing, and who knows? Who knows what he is coming into Saturday night? So I was hoping for Alex Smith. Overall, my expectations were not high. I mean, they only had a 20% chance of winning this game, which is the lowest of all six matchups. That was the most lopsided matchup. I think it was 80-20 Tampa-Washington, according to 538. And you could see a scenario where maybe in that 20% of outcomes, the front four dominates Tom Brady, and that's all the difference, you know, and Washington pulls it out. That's pretty much the only winning scenario. It was like a front four domination. But more easily than that, you could see Tampa Bay just putting up points. I mean, they came into this game with 90 points over the last 2 weeks. They scored 40-plus, like, five times this year. They have, like, of the six best receivers in this game, I think five of them play for the Buccaneers. You could see that being the more likely outcome. And the way that it unfolded was wildly, like, unlike either of those scenarios.
It was. Part of what was weird that I didn't account for when we would talk about that and discuss the possibility of the defense sort of, you know, stepping up and pressuring Brady is I did not realize how good Tom Brady looks right now. He was spectacular. Like, everything else aside, all the rest of what we're going to talk about aside, I don't know how, if you have a quarterback playing like that, it's going to be tough to lose regardless of what's going on the other team. So there's that. But yeah, has Washington ever had this experience of like a random quarterback showing up who was not just sort of better than expected a la Gus Frerotte, but this sort of became a legitimate phenomenon out of nowhere? Because that was something else.
It was unreal. The level that he was playing at, it was so unreal that it's like, I can't put stock in it. Like, I almost don't even want to, like, future cast Taylor Heineke. I still can't even say his name based on that game. Cause it was like, so, otherworldly for who he is and his pedigree. I didn't realize until Saturday night that he was in the XFL, but not really, because he didn't even take a snap. He was a backup in the XFL within the past year. where do you go after not being able to get on the field in the XFL? I guess you go straight to the playoffs against Tom Brady.
Obviously, you become a one-night Twitter phenomenon, at least. Well, that was what I found myself thinking about. Was the closest I can think about it is definitely not anybody with Washington. But what it felt like for us Saturday night has to be what it felt like for Rams fans in 1999 when Kurt Warner, you know, takes over for Trent Green being injured, and Trent Green had looked so great, and this was supposed to be their year, and Warner comes in, and that first week he looked great. He looked amazing. But at the time, everybody talked about it the way I know I'm thinking about Heineke right now, which is like, wow, what a nice fluke. Good story. Oh, well, pity it's not going to last. And then, of course, you know, lasted not only that year, but through an entire Hall of Fame career for Kurt Warner. I don't think that's going to happen for Heineke, but I mean, I can imagine what those Rams fans must have thought, because I know right now I'm like, well, that was fun. Oh, well, moving on, never going to see him again. Like I was listening to, I think it was JP and the guys on the NBC Sports Washington podcast. It may have been somebody else, but they were like, I think it was JP was like, talking about, you know, can you make Taylor Heineke the starter going into next year, or can't you? And I was like, what? Like, no, what? But where do you fall on that?
That is wild. Like, to me, I could not imagine going into 21 season with him as the starter, unless you've drafted someone and you've decided that that person is not ready for whatever reason.
See,
I couldn't imagine a scenario where everybody's lined up behind Taylor Heineke based on this one game. And also, by the way, he got injured, just like it seems that he has gotten injured every time he's played over the years.
Yeah, strong Colt McCoy vibes on that one from him, where every time he gets a chance, he gets injured. And now I don't want him to be the starter. I've reached the point, and this is, I guess, more looking forward than looking at the game, where I would be comfortable if they went into next season with, let's say, Heineke and Kyle Allen and a third sort of average to above average journeyman. Teddy Bridgewater is the guy I keep mentioning, but whichever one of these guys that people keep mentioning you get, basically saying, find a way to spend your $20 million a year on two or three quarterbacks instead of on two-thirds of one quarterback, and redistribute the funds elsewhere. I would be okay with that, because to me, the big lesson of this game is that this team is going to be in, or should be in, a position where with above average quarterback play, they are, you know, one of the top, whatever, five or six teams in the NFC. Like, that's a pretty cool place to be. It's a much different feeling from where they've been the last several years, where it was like, well, we could just lock down a quarterback, and then this is a very different place to be. That's how I came away from it.
Yeah, I mean, they look like they're a ascending playoff team. Like, they're the lowest rung of playoff team in 2020, and they're rising, regardless of what happens at the quarterback position, because it couldn't be worse than 2020. I mean, the quarterback could not be worse. Please don't test the accuracy of this statement, because I don't want to see worse than a rotating door of Dwayne Haskins, Kyle Allen, Alex Smith, and Haskins, Alex Smith, Taylor Heineke, Alex Smith, Taylor Heineke. I mean, that is brutal.
And it's important to say that it was, people keep saying about 60% of Alex Smith. I think that's generous. I think you're probably around 40% of Alex Smith's athletic abilities.
Both of those Alex Smiths, or all three of those Alex Smiths I mentioned, were all very compromised Alex Smiths.
So,
but anyway, like I would love him as the backup. I mean, I don't want to get down on him now because of the future. Like this in the present tense, like, that was amazing. He's a legend for this one.
Yep.
He took the world by storm. It was honestly, other than maybe like the Browns pantsing the Steelers, it was the best thing from the Super Wild Card weekend. It was Taylor Heineke. We always will remember that performance. My company made the Legend of Taylor Heineke shirts. Like, I'm going to get one. I'm going to wear that shit. I love him. And I think he's almost like the perfect backup quarterback. I think it would be great if we had either an acquired, like, legitimate franchise type quarterback, or a drafted quarterback, and he's the backup. It's like, I don't know that he's any better than Kyle Allen, for example, But there's no reason to think he's any worse. And what he showed Saturday was at least he's got it in him. He's got it in him to be special. You can't bank on it, but it's there.
Well, I mean, I think his ceiling seems maybe higher than Kyle Allen's. I'm not sure if the floor is much different. It took me a while to figure out who he reminded me of, but once I figured it out, he reminded me so much of watching Doug Flutie play that it was really weird. That's because I have not thought about Doug Flutie in probably, a decade, but that was exactly what he reminded me of.
He's got some moxie. I don't know if I've ever referenced the word moxie more than I did on Saturday night. Like, so many, the two things he did that were just like very gutty, like backup quarterback performance things. The one is that thing where the play kind of breaks down and he sort of like hides behind the lineman, like so close that he can kind of like put his hand on the lineman's back, and he somehow squirts out and like gets a big gain. Like, that was very, Heinicke. And then also that thing where he's kind of backpedaling and he knows he just needs to get rid of the ball, but the receiver isn't really out of his break yet, so he just lofts it to the spot and it somehow is like right there. He did that a couple times, like the Sims Jr. touchdown, for example. Those types of plays, it was like magic. And it wasn't something it wasn't really how you draw it up, you know?
Yeah, he was like a kid out there, just having fun.
And the touchdown was, amazing. When he ran and dove from like the 5-yard line and Chase Young runs over and points to the nameplate. I mean, that was like the crescendo. That was amazing. I'm getting goosebumps just like thinking about that play.
Yeah, and that's one where if they had somehow managed to win the game, that moment would have been iconic in like NFL history. As it stands, it's just going to be a happy Washington fan memory.
Be a nice t-shirt.
Yeah, it would. Somebody should look into that.
And didn't he like sprain his shoulder or something on that play, like his left shoulder?
Yeah, his AC joint.
Sort of injury was suffered. Yeah.
Yeah. And you could see it. I mean, you could see that he stopped using the left arm almost entirely after that. It was pretty nuts. It was also a lot of fun to watch in a way that this team hasn't been since like 2012 or 11, whatever year that RG3 year was. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was fun. That was just really enjoyable to watch, even when they didn't win. I don't know. It was a really nice end to a really nice season. And I kind of think it's almost the best end we could have hoped for, because there was no part of me that saw this team making some sort of improbable Super Bowl run. That wasn't in the cards. So if you got to go out, this was as fun a way as any. Plus it was Saturday night. So like we said last week, there was still a whole day to sort of, watch other people play football.
I mean, I watch people play football all day, Saturday and Sunday for my job. It was a lot. I feel like I've overdosed on football, and the national championship is happening tonight. Like, did everybody watch all the games? Like, all six games? It was wonderful, but it was also, like, just too much of a good thing.
I tried. I will definitely say there were points where I was, had to be doing other things and stuff. Part of the problem, I think, is that none of the games was great. I think the Washington game was certainly
Colts Bills was really good.
The Colts Bills
Washington
good.
Was good. Everything else is questionable.
I mean, and then I don't remember if you said this since we went on or if this was when we were chatting before we started recording, but the Browns game was fun. But the Browns game was fun in the sense of it was really enjoyable watching the Steelers get humiliated.
Well, let's get back to our game.
Yeah.
It's wild that Washington had the ball, was driving to tie at the end. Like, we were within a score. We lost by a score. And there was no run game. Antonio Gibson was the leading non-Taylor Heinicke rusher. Gibson was 14 for 31. McKissick, 2 for 5. So our running backs averaged less than 2.5 yards a carry. The defense, I'm not going to say they got shredded. I think they were helped out by a lot of drops. But the defense was underwhelming. I mean, if we're going to be a top five defense, they got their asses beat.
Yeah.
But it's tough. It's Tom Brady. And like, they were going up against a legit offensive juggernaut. But Brady seemed pretty comfortable back there.
Well, and that brings me around to, again, the point about how much of your cap you're going to invest in a quarterback, because I think that improving at linebacker, improving at wide receiver, and improving at a defensive back spot all take priority to me over a top-tier investment in a quarterback. I think if you improve at those three spots, even just somewhat, and then get an average to above average quarterback, I think you're in better shape than if you slot in like a Matt Stafford, but try to roll back this same defense again. Like there's areas where they need help.
I think I'd rather use my capital on quarterback and receiver, and then do what I can at linebacker and corner or defensive back. I mean, if you want to talk about safeties, like middle linebacker or linebacker is one of those positions, like running back, where I feel like you can address it mid tier or lower in the draft. But wide receiver, quarterback, like it's hard to get a bargain there.
Is it?
And wide receiver for them. I mean, normally I would be a quarterback. You know me. I wanted to draft Tua or Herbert if you had Ryan Herbert over Chase Young. So I've got my own quarterback, but receiver for the Washington is so bad. Cam Sims and Steve Sims, for those to be your second and third guys, it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. So to me, those are the two, quarterback and wide receiver. And then we can look to the defense.
To me, wide receiver, I agree with you, needs to be pretty much the absolute top priority. But I feel like there's been really good wide receivers available through at least the first three rounds of the draft lately.
McLaurin. I mean, McLaurin at three it sways me.
I feel like a lot of the other breakout guys this year have been, it's second round at least. Although I will say that I think you're right in the position to take one of the top three wideouts. I think it's right around where they got Justin Jefferson this year.
Like if they got a stud wideout at 19, I'd be pretty stoked about that.
Agreed. I mean, I could further to your point, I could see going wide receiver with the first pick and then trying to get address linebacker with the second pick. I'd be okay with that.
But who's going to play the quarterback though? Like, that's the thing. Like, we can't go back with Heinicke Allen.
I just feel like there's so many guys that are going to be available, whether it's veterans at the end or mid-tier guys or what. I just, the idea of investing $20 to $30 million in a Stafford or a Matt Ryan, who I keep hearing mentioned, people like that. Even Mariota is going to be too expensive, I think. But I think you can get away with a guy like that. And
it's interesting. I mean, like watching Rivers on the Colts was interesting, because I mean, not that I think Rivers isn't a top quarterback anymore, but I feel like if we had Rivers this year, it would have been a totally different story.
Yeah.
But he's like a Hall of Fame quarterback at the end of his line. I mean, it's not like they're all out there. I mean, is Matt Ryan or Matt Stafford as good as Phil Rivers?
I think Matt Stafford is. I'd have to look at the statistics. I think Stafford definitely is. I like Stafford a lot. I do. I just don't know that I want to pay the money that he's going to command.
This was an interesting weekend for quarterbacks, because I felt like a good half the games, it was like, is this Philip Rivers' last game? Is this Drew Brees' last game? Is this Ben Roethlisberger's last game? And in some cases, the answers to those might be yes. I mean, Rivers is probably going to come back. Brees might retire, but not this week. Roethlisberger might have played his last game. I mean, these guys are like institutions. They've been a part of our Sundays for, 15 plus seasons. Then you've got downstream from that, like the Ryan Stafford level. There is going to be a ton of change up. I think pretty much every name we've said would be a clear step up.
Now,
at least for 21.
The interesting counterpoint is that unless I'm blanking on someone, pretty much every team in the playoffs, and certainly every team that advanced, I think, had either a rising superstar like Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, or one of those 20-year veterans who are just unimpeachably good. I think Washington was really
Brees, Brady, and then Rodgers, Goff. Goff's an exception there.
Goff's an exception, and especially because he almost didn't play.
And then you've got Baker, Mahomes, Lamar, Josh. I think I heard that Baker's the oldest quarterback in the AFC quartet.
So what's interesting is...
God, that's some awesome quarterbacking. I mean, you remove Goff out of that, like, that group of eight. That's good. That's good stuff. Like, I'm looking forward to next weekend.
What's really interesting about Goff to me from our standpoint is that, I mean, that's pretty much the model we're talking about with Washington is you get somebody who is Goff caliber, although hopefully not at, you know, whatever it was, fourth overall or first prices. Overall pick in the draft prices. And you rely on your defense, your, you know, superstar defense theoretically to do most of the work. That's interesting.
I mean, I'm still though, like, very allured by, like, who is the quarterback that they could get either at 19 or by moving up a little bit. I'm not too into the idea of, like, trading a ton of picks for, like, a top pick or even for a Deshaun Watson, like, if it means, you know, trading, like, your next three first rounders. But could you get someone? I mean, like, the average draft position of Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, I won't keep going because I'm, you know, not everything in front of me, but the average draft position of those three dudes is like 17th.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not like you have to be at the top of the draft to get a franchise QB. I mean, it's going to be a gamble either way, up and down the first round.
It is. You know who really intrigues me? And I think this is going to make me look stupid down the line, and you might even laugh at me right away. But I would be intrigued if there was a way to get Carson Wentz where you get something, where if the Eagles had to do the Brock Osweiler with him, where they have to basically give something up with him, and you get Wentz plus something. And plus, I know his salary is high, but I think a lot of it would be already covered by Philly. You know what I'm saying? I think it would have been in the bonuses.
Yeah, it might not be that much of a burden. And I mean, he's played at like flirting with MVP conversation level. And
exactly.
Not too distant past.
And he's young, and you would get him as somebody who would have as much hatred for a division rival as could possibly imagine. So that's one that sort of intrigues me. And he seems like somebody who might fit in the Scott Turner system. You know, he's got some mobility, which you need some of, but not too much. And he can throw theoretically, or at least he used to be able to.
I'd be intrigued, but I also didn't watch Philadelphia this year. Like, it sounds like it was really bad.
He was awful. He was
like,
you
have to see something that is like, okay, we can fix this.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
I don't either. He was dreadful, but part of what you would see is, well, he's probably a step up over everything that we currently have. Plus, in this narrative, we're getting a, you know, conditional third or fourth or whatever with him, plus a bunch of his salary is being paid for by Philly. So, you know, it's a pretty low risk option in this imaginary story, which might have nothing to do with how reality plays out.
Let's talk about things that are not Taylor Heinicke from this game. I guess the second thing would be Chase Young. He wanted Tom. He didn't get Tom. But it seems like maybe he was, I mean, blocked by a left tackle and a Rob Gronkowski the entire game.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
It looked like it to me from what I could see. And I think when he said he wanted Tom, I think he would be satisfied with Montez Sweat getting Tom twice and having a pretty impactful game. I don't think he necessarily felt like it had to be him personally. I mean, how did you take that whole thing? It wound up being a little bit of a whatever you want to call it, like a controversy that...
I love it. I love that he would go off the field being like, I want Tom, because he's not doing it in like a shitty... I don't think it's like a negative with him. Like,
yeah.
Everything with him seems very positive and like, yeah, it might be brash or whatever, but like, I had zero problem with it. I think he got trumpeted, like you might see it on like Get Up or whatever, or on like Bleacher Report's Twitter feed. But that's just because they need content. You know, I had no problem with it.
I had no problem with it either. It would have been another thing if he was looking to the following week and was like, oh, can't wait to play Aaron Rodgers or whatever. You know, that would have been bad. But I would have been much more unhappy if he'd been like, well, this was a good win, but we have to face Tom Brady next week, and obviously we're going to lose. So, oh, well, sorry, guys. Like, you know, what do you – there's only so many things say on the topic.
One thing that is related to this is Daron Payne had a game. He had, like, what, 2 sacks and a forced fumble, I think?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said Sweat, and I think I meant Payne. My bad.
I think Sweat had a – like, I think he had some nice numbers, but Payne had the big game. If Young had had Payne's game – that would have been something. Like that would have been a headline. But instead, it was Payne, who's kind of a nondescript guy. But we forget that he was like what, the 14th pick in the draft, and a lot of people thought he should have gone higher. It was nice to see him get some shine and make some plays. I just wish overall Brady wasn't so comfortable. As Fred Snoot once famously, or not so famously, said, Tom Brady just makes love to the pocket, and he was, I don't know. It looked like he was very comfortable all night long. And that was disappointing.
He just looked so good. And I thought he looked good even before we got to see Ben Roethlisberger show you what aging really looks like.
No, we saw that against Washington. I mean,
that's true.
I don't know how they were 11-0, because I didn't really watch them. And then I watched them play against Washington, and it was like, this team was 11. And ever since then, they've looked that way.
Yeah, they just ran out of gas. They have looked terrible. Mm-hmm. The funny thing is, you say aside from Taylor Heinicke, I didn't come away with a lot of thoughts aside from Taylor Heinicke. You know, the guy.
I had some negative thoughts.
Yeah, what do you got?
Well, okay, the two plays that it just killed me. One is on the opening drive. I think the second play when Heinicke goes deep. And now keep in mind at this point, you're really thinking Washington's going to struggle for points. And I'm not talking about 23 points, which they got to, or even 20. I'm thinking like they're going to struggle to get to like into the teens.
Right.
And the second play, Heinicke throws it deep over the middle to Cam Sims, who kind of awkwardly elevates early, still gets good hands on the ball, and just drops it. And I mean, that hurt. That hurt so bad. Because it was like, at the moment, and then even in hindsight, it hurts. But at the moment, you're like, this could be the biggest play of the day. And yeah, so that one hurt me. And Cam Sims has dropped a fair number of balls this year. I don't want to see Cam Sims as the second wide receiver anymore, even if he put up 100 yards on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I mean, he'd be a fine third wide receiver. He's a fine guy to have around. But yeah, you don't want him to be your number two option.
Yeah, and same with Steven Sims, who also needs to stop punting, returning punts. That needs to stop.
Yes.
But the other play was a punt. It was a pretty crucial point. I can't remember exactly what the game situation was. It was second half, and Tressway put it down. It should have been down inside the 10, maybe even inside the 5. But Troy Apke caught the ball running and carried it into the end zone. It was like, I think he thought maybe a Tampa Bay player had touched it. Maybe. I don't know. It was very bizarre. And instead of being down like inside the 5, it was a touchback. It was a befuddling play.
He definitely thought a Tampa Bay player touched it, which the one thing I will say in his defense is that I also thought it had, to be fair, I didn't so much think a Tampa Bay player had touched it as I thought it had touched a Tampa Bay player. I thought it bounced off a guy's, like, one of those hand warmer things.
Right.
But even so, have the common sense to be like, well, if you touched him and I have it, then we get the ball and I trust my offense to score. And if it didn't touch him,
also,
I have it.
Also, no Tampa Bay players were rushing to the ball. They were all going away from the ball. Like, it wasn't like if a player had touched it, there was like a scrum. The ball was just there. I know it happens in an instant, but that was rough.
That was really bad. I agree. I think you're underselling how done I feel with Steven Sims. His errors are significantly more detrimental than his positive plays are helpful. I mean, he's made some bad ones in the last few weeks, and it's enough with that. He seemed promising last year, and this year I would be fine never having to see him take the field again.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think there was maybe a punt he should have fielded but didn't, and that put them in a bad situation? Was that from this week? I can't.
I think every he's week done that. Something. Yeah, he's done that several times. He fields things he shouldn't field. He fair catches when he shouldn't fair catch. He just his decision making in the process of getting the ball in a punt is just flawed beyond imagining. Now, on the rare occasions where he catches it clean and has a little room, he's a pretty good returner. But the process of getting there is so troubling that I just never need to see it again.
What's Brandon Banks doing? Can we bring Brandon Banks back?
Brandon Banks must be like a cube by now, because he was like 5 feet tall and he's, I presume, no longer a professional athlete. And I feel like you just instantly turn into a cube.
I don't have any like drop stats, but I think I remember maybe Sims Jr. and Isaiah Wright all having drops. Is that accurate?
I think that's correct. Yes. I think Logan Thomas may even had a drop also, although he had enough good catches that, you know, everybody's going to have the occasional drop. And that's really the problem. It's the same as sort of what I was just saying about Steven Sims, is that we need high points. You need good things to offset the stupid errors, and then it's okay. But
right.
I don't know. I guess that was it. It's just seeing Heinicke, you were like, oh, that's what it's like when one individual is – sort of trying to elevate the rest of the offense. And I don't feel like we've had that. Like Terry McLaurin tries, but wide receiver is such a dependent position that it's been hard and he's been injured. I don't know. It's just, I feel like they need some of the same impact on offense that they've been getting on defense. And I don't know that they have it yet.
A couple of things that were like both sides in it. Tampa had a ton of drops. I wouldn't be surprised if Tampa had more drops. I feel like that was like the only thing that was keeping their offense in check for the drop passes, because Brady was on one. He was just so accurate. The other thing that I don't know which team it favored was the officiating. There were like at least three big questionable calls that come to mind that were kind of a mixed bag. Like there was the Heinicke fumble in their own red zone that was somehow ruled not a fumble. I don't know how. He pretty clearly fumbled. But they went to review, and it was not a fumble. I mean, I would have been livid if I was a Tampa fan. And the other thing was there was like a Heinicke scramble first down that was pretty big. I think it was on a third down or maybe a second and 10, you know, whatever. But it was called back for a sheriff holding that was like not holding, and it certainly wasn't egregious.
Oh, that was right towards the end of the game. That was one of the, I think that's the one that put them in the fourth and long, wasn't it?
No. So that's a third one.
Okay.
But by the way, fun note that I think is true. I think that was Sheriff's first penalty of the season.
Yeah, or certainly his first holding.
That's fucking crazy. And yeah, all pro. Shout out to Sheriff. I think he's the Washington's first all-pro since Matt Turk. I'm not kidding. I don't think they've had an all-pro in like 22 years, and the last one was Matt Turk.
That's correct.
Punter. This is a wild stat. Like that is a wild stat of ineptitude.
Anyway, moving on. I think, but I was surprised by it didn't get more play. Like, that's a huge deal here. That's been one of those stats that every year they make the all-pro announcements, and every year, you know, everybody runs there. Remember Matt Turk? Yeah.
My other, it's not as good, but it's probably more meaningful, is that the Wizards haven't had a 50-win regular season. Now, keep in mind, NBA team, there's probably like eight NBA teams every year that win 50 games. It's kind of like the NBA equivalent of like 10 wins, maybe 11 wins. Wizards haven't had a 50-win season since 1978. 40-plus years, they haven't had the equivalent of an 11-win football season. Anyway, the third one was, I think the play you're alluding to is J.D. McKissic. It was second and 10 on the final drive. They're down 8. He catches a swing pass, kind of bobbles it. There's like a fumble out of bounds situation. It should have been, if he caught it, which I think he did, it should have been like a 3rd and 2. Instead, they ruled it no catch. And then on 3rd and 10, Heinicke got sacked. So the last play of the game was a 4th and 21.
That's right. So that's right.
So that was the other like questionable officiating call that stood out. But I feel like there were others throughout the game, and it was just really shaky. It just had an impact. I don't know which way overall it favored.
I didn't feel like it favored either team too much. I felt, especially because then watching, God, I'm going to blank now. I think it was the New Orleans game yesterday. I felt like the calls were favoring New Orleans just insanely while New Orleans was already winning. It was just, I would have been losing my mind if that were this. This one, it didn't bother me. I did get one text from a friend who was a little worked up about the officiating, but usually there would be more if everybody, if it was really egregious, you know?
Yeah. I think the hold one, the fumble, but the hold one really bothered me because usually the griping about holding is like not calling the holding, you know, like you could look at almost any replay and be like, oh, how'd they miss that? So like for it to be like a called holding is just cruel and unusual. What else from this game? Anything?
There's really not much, weirdly. Like there's the one, you know, great story of Heinicke, and then the sort of general like part of it is they didn't embarrass themselves. You know, especially coming in at 7-9 and, you know, allegedly winning this horrible division, coming off that Philly game that was just an embarrassment for literally every single human being involved. I thought they finished the season sort of on a respectable note. You know, it's I'm comfortable going out on that, and I'm excited to think about the off season because they don't need to be the off season champions this year, but I think this could be, they could make some achievable, significant moves and wind up with a significantly improved team. That's where I left. I mean, I definitely wound up being like, that was enough to end the season. I'm ready to start looking forward, but I'm satisfied. The whole year was better than we had any right to expect.
What a roller coaster. I mean, the name change, that happened within the past year. Rivera being hired before that, all the nastiness, like, organizationally with ownership, et cetera. Don't even want to get into that. But, I mean, hiring a new president, drafting Chase Young, this first 2 months of the season, first 2.5 months of the season being so bad, I was barely watching. To end on this run over the past like 6-7 weeks was a surprise and a delight. I mean, fantastic. I will wear my WFT happened 7-9 division champs t-shirt proudly forever. It was really fun. And yeah, like it actually seems positive going forward. We have something to look forward to. I'm interested and enthusiastic about the future of the Washington football team. Is this when it all goes to shit?
You know it, buddy. But interesting thought, though. Here's an interesting thought experiment to go out on. So Ron Rivera was hired, officially announced on January 1st, 2020. Alleged, you know, the reports came out on December 31st, but I don't think it was official until January 1st. Given 2020, given that the whole meme about 2020 is that it was like, you know, the worst year in recorded human history or whatever, did the Washington football team have the best 2020 of any entity that we can think of?
I mean, who and what else is in the running here?
I honestly have no idea. I mean, I guess.
Is Peloton yeah, in the mix?
Peloton, Zoom, I guess if you wanted to consider the coronavirus itself as an entity, it had a pretty impactful year. But I mean, there's very few organizations that I would say, if you were to write the story of 2020 and make it like a movie out of it, it would be like an uplifting, you know, positive movie. I guess maybe the NBA, although they managed to tank some of their goodwill at the very end there, when they switched.
Well, I think why the WFT is so good for this is because there was like a lot of tough stuff in the mix. Like I didn't even mention Haskins and like the Haskins saga in that whole saga of 2020 for Washington. There was a lot of ups and downs, but it ended triumphantly. So, you know, like a good movie.
Yeah, I would watch. I don't know how you could do it. It wouldn't be very interesting, but I would watch a 30 for 30 on this season. I was going to say I would watch like a mini series or something, but that wouldn't be very good. But I would definitely watch, you know, a decent semi-long form documentary on it.
That's interesting. There's so much meat on the bone. It actually would make a good, like, maybe hour documentary. And even if it wasn't your team. We just had a year where our team actually could be the subject of it's plausible it could be, like, documented down the road.
Well, I mean, and technically even that documentary would be a sequel because you have the whole Alex Smith documentary that helped frame his narrative and helped everybody understand just how bad, how impressive it is that he returned, how bad things got and how impressive it is that he returned.
I still never watched that.
I could not pay me to watch it. No, absolutely not. No.
I just trust everyone else. Everyone else being like, wow, what he went through is enough for me.
Yeah,
to acknowledge what he went through.
I heard enough people saying things like his leg looked like something that had been chewed on by a large animal. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm good. I can picture that vividly. Okay.
It is pretty wild. Yeah. Thinking back to the braces that he was wearing, you know, I mean, just that he actually played this year was just remarkable.
Helped lead the team to what was it, 5-2 down the stretch or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bonkers. That whole thing is insane. What a weird year.
All right. Well, what's our next excuse to come together? I mean, there isn't going to be much player movement until after the season. I don't expect there's going to be much coaching movement.
Well, they're talking about front office changes, possible front office changes. Obviously, we are going to become a dedicated WandaVision podcast starting next week.
Oh, yeah.
An hour a week on WandaVision. Not really. Probably can't manage that. Football-wise, I think the front office is the only thing that's immediate, and then it'll be, you know, the usual assortment of off-season stuff. Mm-hmm. Draft.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The Nats got Kyle Schwarber. Schwarbaum's coming to D.C.
That's very exciting. I'm looking forward to it, I think. Do we like him? I honestly have no idea.
My brief look at Kyle Schwarber's file is that he averaged 30 homers a year from 17 to 19. A lot of them are tape measure shots. He was hurt/not great in 2020. Regarded as a weak defensive outfielder, but the metrics suggest he's okay. And offensively, like in 18-19, his last two full seasons with the Cubs, he was like a good, maybe not very good, but, you know, certainly a good hitter for those two full seasons. So they'll add him to the mix. They added Josh Bell from Pittsburgh, who was very good in 19 to play first base. So they've added two like lefty sluggers to go along with Soto, Turner, Robles, whoever I'm forgetting because it's not baseball season. Seems like a good one-year deal, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I don't think they're done. They might add like a right-handed, like third baseman, you know, Justin Turner type as well, or they could go with Carter Kieboom at that spot. But the Nats look like they will be back in the mix, back to contention in 2021.
All right. Well, we can look forward to that then.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
All right. I guess we should wrap it up. Good season, man.
Good season. That was fun. Let's do it again sometime.
All right, man. Hail to the WFT.
Bye, Jamie.
See ya.